Welcome to the fourth season of the Energy Central Power Perspectives Podcast. We bring leading minds from the energy industry into the podcast booth to discuss the challenges and trends that are transforming and modernizing our energy system. And a quick thank you to Wes Monroe, our sponsor of today's show. Now, let's talk energy. I'm Jason Price, Energy Central Podcast host and director with Wes Monroe, coming to you from New York City. And with me, as always, from Orlando, Florida, is Energy Central producer and community manager, Matt Chester. Matt, it's always exciting to discuss the transformation of our transportation industry. More OEMs have entered the EV market while others have expanded their product lines. EV sales continue to grow. Battery science continues to evolve. Public and private charging networks are cropping up, including along highways with the NEVI funds. That's the National EV Infrastructure Program Formula Funds. And 2024 is poised to be a major year, not only for manufacturers of EVs, but also on the utilities and grid operators who are tasked with powering these increasingly prominent forms of transportation. What are some of the common questions and concerns that you're hearing from utility professionals on Energy Central when it comes to EV future?
Well, you're right, Jason. Our listeners are largely from the pool of utility professionals. So while they have some of the typical questions that everybody has regarding EVs, things like the technology, the batteries, the range, et cetera, they're even more so looking at the way that the growth of EVs will impact the power industry. By adding large swaths of new power demand, how is that impacting the mix of generation sources? By having EVs largely plug into the grid, how is that impacting the planning of transmission and distribution? Are EV fleets going to be available as a flexible source of demand that can be strategically charged at specific times for the benefit of the grid? Or can they eventually even be looked at as a source of mobile energy storage with vehicle-to-grid possibilities? So there's lots of opportunities and challenges that do lay ahead at the intersection of EVs and the utilities. And that's largely what we see discussed in the Energy Central community.
Thanks for that context, Matt. And those questions are undoubtedly the type that are on the mind of today's guest. And we are honored to welcome Britt Reichborn-Schinnerud, the Director of E-Mobility at Con Edison, as New York City and Westchester County steer into the EV revolution. Britt is a distinguished professional in the field of energy and mobility, has been with Con Edison for over 9 years, and has consistently demonstrated her expertise and leadership in the EV transformation for Con Edison. Britt will share her considerable background in program design and implementation to make sure Con Edison stays ahead of the EV market to serve the five boroughs and beyond. Britt, welcome to the Energy Central Power Perspectives Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here.
We're thrilled to be here. We're thrilled to be at the headquarters at Con Edison, so thank you for your hospitality. So before we dive into the future of EVs in New York and beyond, can you give us a peek into what your role at Con Edison is? And what are you most proud of accomplishing in 2023? What exactly is on the to-do list of the Director of E-Mobility for 2024?
Sure. I guess I'll start reminding everybody, or perhaps if you don't know, Con Edison serves New York City and Westchester North, which is a little bit more suburban. So we're really trying to advance clean transportation in this very urban environment here. As Director of E-Mobility, I work on everything EV-related, from our business strategy to program design, implementation, execution, and operations. And when I look back at 2023 and think about the accomplishments I'm most proud of, I think about our electric vehicle infrastructure incentive program, Power Ready. We've been implementing that program since it was authorized in 2020, and it just went through a midpoint review. So led through the regulatory process, many stakeholders participated, and we came out on the other side of that with a program expansion. The program is now a total of $800 million through 2025 or potentially beyond. And through that program, we'll be incentivizing over 21,000 level two chargers and over 3,000 DC fast chargers with that new budget. And what we're most excited about here is the new incentives are really more aligned with today's costs. So that will help us really drive forward the EV charging market in the New York City area. Now, when I look forward to 2024, we have a couple things we're really excited about. One is to take that Make Ready program, Power Ready, which focuses on light duty vehicles, that's really cars, maybe small vans, and look forward to expanding that to a full scale medium and heavy duty program that would address electrification of buses and trucks. And the other thing we're thinking about this year is working with stakeholders through the regulatory process to think about how to better prepare the grid for the fast incoming EV load that Matt talked about.
Right, right. Great. Well, thanks for that. So let's hear about the progress report. Can you provide our listeners with a snapshot of the current state of the electric vehicle market in New York City, including the status of charging infrastructure, adoption rates, time of use rate plans, and related work?
Yeah, sure. So I'll start with the infrastructure. You have a chicken or egg problem. If you have low EV adoption, first you need infrastructure so fleets and personal vehicles can start adopting EVs. So when it comes to the infrastructure, we now have almost 7,000 level two chargers in the New York City area and almost 300 DC fast chargers. That's four times the number of level two that were installed when we started the program and 2.5 times the fast chargers. So what we're seeing is we've really expanded charging access in the New York City area. And, you know, what does that look like in terms of EV adoption? At the end of 2023, 1 in 10 cars purchased was an EV, and that's double what it was at the beginning of that year. So the increase in EV sales share is pretty dramatic. And one thing we're really excited about and shows some of the impacts of the Power Ready program and building out this infrastructure is that EV adoption in New York City is catching up with Westchester. As you can imagine, EV adoption in the early days was led by Westchester. There's a lot of more single family homes, a lot more access to charging at home. By the end of 2023, the percent sales that were EV was identical in New York City and Westchester. So we really saw that gap close. And that means that fleets and personal drivers in New York City now feel just as comfortable adopting EVs. And just, you know, moving from the market side, when it comes to rates and programs, Con Ed actually has commercial time of use rates available to all customers. We even have something we call a standby rate, which has time variable pricing. Some refer to it a little bit as free nights and weekends. Of course, nothing's free, but the cost is much lower to charge during nights and weekends under the standby rate. And we do also have a time of use rate for residential homes as well. So on the rate side, we already have those options. One thing we're really excited about is to be able to build out more our programs that can also encourage charging at certain times of day. And in fact, we really like programs because we can evolve them with the market. We can target particular market segments, and we can try to get the most out of those price signals versus a rate which might be a little bit more fixed and a little bit less nimble.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to talk to you about one of those programs. Con Edison launched a groundbreaking managed charging program. Perhaps you could give us a quick definition and share with us how that launch went, and what were some of the challenges you encountered, and how do you expect this program to evolve?
Yeah, so hot off the presses, a couple weeks ago on January 19th, we launched our commercial managed charging program. Managed charging isn't new to Con Ed. We've had a residential or more vehicle-based managed charging program since 2017. We call Smart Charge New York. That program's been very successful, and there we focused on the vehicle telematics. What we're launching that's new this month is this commercial managed charging program. It's open to any commercial customer. It could be a fleet, an apartment building, a public hub, curbside, chargers at retail locations. And we take data from the charger rather than the vehicles visiting those chargers to determine the incentive levels. And the idea is that the charging station operator, they're the ones that have the power to employ load management software, use something like batteries to help manage the overall profile at the station. And that's what's really important to the utility is at that interconnection point, what does the load look like? A second benefit that we're excited about is the revenue stream from the managed charging program goes to the station operator. So it can help support the business case for installing chargers if the station operator is the one actually getting those incentives. In terms of the rollout, it's early days. So I'd love to say there are no problems yet, which is true. But we do anticipate this will be challenging. This is the first one in the country and perhaps across the globe where any commercial station can participate as long as they can provide the data required for us to monitor their charging. So we haven't set this up as a sort of pilot partnership with one charging station operator or network. So one of the challenges we are anticipating is the availability and quality of charger data. We wanted this program to be very broad, but we have some lessons learned from our Power Ready program and a bunch of pre-engagement we've done with charging station operators and the networks that collects the data from the stations and provide them to the customers and the station operators. What we know is that a lot of those stations don't have 15-minute data for us to actually track their charging behavior and look at how many kilowatts they're using. And that's what we need to determine the incentive. So we're working on ways to innovate around those data limitations and at the same time hoping to partner with the network providers to access better quality data over time. So, you know, the program has a couple key benefits. One of the benefits is it encourages station operators to lower their load during our grid peak times. And that has the benefit of potentially reducing the amount of infrastructure that needs to be built out. It could be at the service level. It could be upstream. And less infrastructure build out can mean lower bill costs to customers. But there's another benefit that we're equally excited about, and that's our ability to learn a lot more about customer charging behavior and how much do price signals actually influence station operators and how much can they actually change their charging behavior based on those incentives. This is really important for grid planning. When we think about a sort of clean transportation state, we make projections about what those loads are going to look like. And as we make those projections, we want to understand how much of that charging load can we actually influence to be off peak? And today, frankly, there really isn't a lot of data. And so when we do our modeling and grid planning, we need more data to be able to better forecast this.
In our prep call, you mentioned a robust load study conducted by Con Edison. Could you share some of the insights from the study and how it informs your strategies for future infrastructure development? And how do you see those insights and the right actions to take are unique to the urban center that is New York City compared to the rest of the country?
So the study in some ways told us what we already knew. We already knew the EV loads were expected to increase. They're expected to increase very quickly. And we also know that they're expected to be highly clustered. That's especially true when you think about medium and heavy duty fleets, those trucks and buses in a dense area like New York City. There aren't a lot of places where those vehicles can be domiciled. And because of industrial business zones that have been developed, zoning in general, and land costs, those locations are often near each other and they're pretty fixed. So we don't expect the locations of depots to be changing a lot over time in our area. We conducted the study, just a really robust bottom-up approach. We took sort of broadest, highest quality telematics data we could get. We used New York City fleet data, projections for where fast charging will need to happen from taxi and limousine commissions, satellite data. We even visited the sites where there's clusters of hubs to see, are they all even parking on the depot and how are they parking on the depot? Because in fact, a lot of them actually have to park on the street due to space constraints. And from that, we developed this view of EV load across all of our 84 network areas, as well as identified some of these hotspots, these cluster areas where we expect the most charging to happen. And so it gave us some insights. There were some areas that were already on our radar, but other areas we weren't as aware of where we should be getting ready for a rapid ramp in EV load pretty quickly. And there's some investments in the grid that we should be making very soon to make sure we're ready ahead of time. We're working to think a little bit differently about planning rather than just in time. We want to make sure we're ready when that load comes in, and we want to prepare the grid ahead of time rather than, for example, waiting for specific fleet plans and their load letters to actually start planning our grid investments. Now, what's different in New York City? New York's density means that a lot of those hotspot areas have vehicles parking on the street. And when you look at those satellite images, it sometimes looks like you're looking at cans of sardines. The vehicles are parked in there, sort of like first in, last out. And there's no real concept of, for example, school buses parked, you know, plugged into a level two charger overnight, one plug to one bus, slow charging overnight. That's just not going to work at a lot of these depots with today's technologies. And so in our load projections, we have to factor in how much fast charging has to happen for those vehicles that are going to have to be charging perhaps, you know, before they head back to the depot or to their spot on the street where you see school buses and even some municipal fleets park there on a regular basis.
So as follow-up, how accurate are these studies as new load comes online from every facet of society? Because it's not only EV load, but also demand from buildings, the heating system, new businesses that open up. I just don't understand how a load study of today will paint an accurate picture of tomorrow. So how are you able to plan the grid this way?
You know, it does probably sound complex, but taking a step back, we've been operating the grid here in the New York City area for 200 years. With unprecedented reliability. And we've been forecasting loads to prepare the grid for economic changes, technology changes, and so on. I think what's new about today is that the EV load is coming faster than any other load increase in history. Whether you look at, for example, the onset of air conditioning, this EV load increase is much more rapid. So what this means is that we need to be thinking even more about the risk of being too late versus even some of the benefits of building out the grid a little bit early and making sure we're ready when the transportation load comes in. And when we do our load study, you know, we have our very robust view of the transportation load and we layer that onto our company forecast. So we're still leveraging all of the company forecast methodologies we use to plan our grid day to day over the last couple centuries.
Great. Well, I want to ask you about the commercial industrial market. So what are the key barriers you're seeing that C&I customers are facing when making decisions to electrify?
It goes back, I think, a little bit to that chicken or egg question and the cost. When we started the program, we had a BD lead, business development lead, come in from energy efficiency, and she's still with us and going strong. And she said, this is really different because in energy efficiency, the message is install this and save money. EV charging is a little different. Today, the business case is a little bit more challenged with less EV adoption on the road. Now we're seeing this like virtuous cycle where we're installing charging, we're getting more EV adoption. We expect that cycle to continue and that will gradually help the business case. But what you need to do is convince, say, an apartment building or a workplace or a retail establishment, you will be more valued with EV charging, whether it's getting more renters coming or a higher co-op price, or you might be able to get more customers at your retail establishment. The other thing that can be a bit challenging is some of the locations that would install these are big institutions. And in general, decision-making, big changes, that can be tricky and a little bit slower at some of those bigger organizations.
I can imagine that. Let's switch to public charging. This is important and key to enabling growth of EV adoption as well. So can you share what you've learned from the curbside charging pilot program that you've run with a partner called Flow?
Yeah, that's right. This program was actually a partnership with New York City Department of Transportation, Flow, and Con Ed. And what we look to do is roll out 100 public curbside chargers across all five boroughs of New York City. It's been a huge success. I'll start there. We originally expected the utilization would be only about 12% across this network. The latest numbers I have in front of me, system-wide, the utilization is 62%. That means 62% of the time on a 24-hour basis, those chargers are plugged into a vehicle. And the vast majority of that time, they're actually actively charging. When they're not, they're paying a dwell fee. So that encourages the driver to move on once they're done charging. But it means that these chargers have been incredibly attractive. We even have one station that is being used 82% of the time. So this pilot has been a real success. It has exceeded our expectations. We've also seen really great uptime and reliability with these chargers through a very robust maintenance program. And you know, clearly, curbside is a really great fit for urban New York City drivers. One thing I'll add is that it really needs to come along with public fast charging. Curbside alone, I think, can't solve the problem. And you're going to need a lot of fast charging hubs. And we're seeing a ton of market interest in those hubs. And we've gotten that expanded plug target and budget in our most recent order from the commission so we can actually deliver on that.
Britt, you said you used the term dwell charging. Is that like electric loitering of some sort?
A little bit. I mean, the idea is that this curbside charger is a resource. And if you aren't actively charging, you really should vacate the spot and open it up for somebody else, especially at these utilization rates. Probably somebody else is interested in charging at that time. So it's a way to sort of nudge along the driver financially.
I like that. Yeah. Okay. And all these advancements will require continued investments. Are there any key orders pending by the commission that will influence these investments? Any budgets? How are the budgets allowing you to plan? So what are some of the business and regulatory decisions that are in queue that may enable further unlocking this transformation that you're leading?
There's one that's right around the corner. We have, as a companion to the Smart Charge Commercial Managed Charging Program, Smart Charge Tech. It's a technology incentive program, and so that could support software subscription, purchase of software, energy storage, any technology that can help the station operator manage their load around that peak period. And we think of it sort of as a companion to Smart Charge Commercial. That commission order is pending. And then two big development areas I alluded to at the beginning are medium heavy duty incentive programs, the business case for fleets to transition to electric is still quite challenged across those like heavier sort of trucks and buses. And so, you know, the lens that they use is they look at their total cost of ownership. I know the cost to buy, operate, and retire an internal combustion engine vehicle. And at the same time, I could compare that to the same cost for an electric vehicle. And when they see that the electric cost is still higher, it's challenging for the fleets. And so when fleets see that the electric cost is higher, they're going to be less likely to transition to electric. If you have incentive programs like we have on the light duty side through Power Ready to cover the infrastructure to bring power to the charger, that can help improve the total cost of ownership and nudge more fleets to make the transition. The second is we talked a little bit about the load study we did and how we're thinking a bit different about planning. And the Public Service Commission started a proceeding last spring that addresses both medium heavy duty vehicle segment and what the market might need, as well as how utilities might want to plan a little bit more proactively. So as I said, be ready for the EV load before the customer comes to you and requests it and you realize it's too late to build that substation that takes 5 years. And so in that regulatory process this year, we're going to be working through developing a framework with stakeholders, the Department of Public Service staff, to really manage how we can be able to plan more proactively.
Great. Britt, can you talk a bit about the policy impacts as New York considers new transportation rules, such as the new taxi and limousine green rides rule? And how is this impacting EV adoption in the city? And what sort of adjustments to your planning does it require?
Yeah, policies, even at the local level, can have a really big influence, actually. One example we saw was we have a law, Local Law 97, that has requirements for certain buildings of a certain size in terms of their emissions. And we were hearing from co-op boards and other building energy managers so much concern about adding EV chargers because that would actually worsen their performance under Local Law 97. So a lot of potential EV charging adopters were sort of stalling out. And the Department of Buildings actually issued a bulletin clarifying that EV load could be excluded. So that's an example where, you know, policy was inadvertently holding back clean energy progress. And that clarifying bulletin really just sort of opened things up for program participants. The green rides is a really great example, partly because of the speed at which it had an impact. And we talked a bit about the speed of EV adoption and how, you know, just through policy compliance alone, let alone market factors, we're expecting it to be very rapid. The green rides rule was issued by the Taxi and Limousine Commission in October of 2023. It created requirements for higher vehicle fleets like Uber and Lyft above a certain size to green their fleets over time. So the requirements start in 2025. By 2030, those fleets need to be entirely zero emissions, or they can also have wheelchair accessible vehicles to comply as well. You know, that's one influence. Second, they issued some new licenses, and we saw an incredible surge in EV purchases. For November and December, you know, we track this every month, double the number of EVs were sold those 2 months than sort of the typical average in previous months. So you can see how policies really can either inadvertently hold back or push forward clean transportation progress.
Very interesting. Britt, we are thrilled to have you on the show, and you clearly have your hands full. We're going to give you the last word, but we want to pivot now to what we call the lightning round, which gives us an opportunity to learn more about you, the person, rather than you, the professional. Mm-hmm. So we have a set of questions we want to ask you. We ask you to keep your response to one word or phrase. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your next car going to be?
So my husband tells me, since he's the one that's most into cars, there's a small Volvo. I think it's the EX30. It's almost as small as the Mini we have now.
If it's electric?
Of course. Yeah.
Who tends to leave the lights on in your household?
That would be me. My eyesight is much worse than my husband's, and I want to see what's going on.
Given your title is mobility, what's your favorite snack on road trips?
Popcorn.
If you had the attention of automobile executives, what would you like to tell them?
I would tell them we're getting the grid ready.
And what would your career have been like if not in the energy and utilities field?
A little bit out there, astrophysics.
Okay, nicely done, Britt. And as I mentioned, you get the last word. So for those listening to our conversation today and who may want to replicate the success you and your team have seen in the world of EVs, what's the most important message you hope they take away from this episode?
I would say things are moving very fast in this space. There are a lot of players that need to come together, government, organizations, stakeholders, companies, and technology providers. But the utility really is at the center of any clean energy project that actually gets built. And so we have a really important central role to play in driving the market and facilitating this transition.
And it's an exciting time.
Yeah.
Terrific. Thanks for some real insight today, Britt. I'll surely expect that our listeners will have some questions to follow up on the conversation. And we invite those listeners to log into the energycentral.com platform and leave their questions and comments. We will be sure to bring you back to provide follow-up. Until then, though, thanks again for sharing your insight with us on today's episode.
Thank you so much. It was really great to be here.
You can always reach Britt through the Energy Central platform, where she welcomes your questions and comments. We also want to give a shout-out and thanks to the podcast sponsors that made today's episode possible. Thanks to West Monroe. West Monroe is the leading partner for the nation's largest electric, gas, and water utilities, working together to drive grid modernization, clean energy, and workforce transformation. West Monroe's comprehensive services are designed to support utilities in advancing their digital transformation, building resilient operations, securing federal funding, and providing regulatory advisory support. With a multidisciplinary team of experts, West Monroe offers a holistic approach that addresses the challenges of the grid today and provides innovative solutions for a sustainable future. And once again, I'm your host, Jason Price. Plug in and stay fully charged in the discussion by hopping into the community at energycentral.com. And we'll see you next time at the Energy Central Power Perspectives Podcast.